Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. Journalist Dar Jamail joins us from Damascus, Syria, to talk about the climate there as Israeli F-16s bomb Lebanon and make their way along the Beirut to Damascus highway towards Syria. Dar Jamail covered the Iraq war and occupation during 8 months, reporting on the early stages of war and occupation, covering two sieges of Fallujah in 2004 through the 2005 elections. You will find his work in The Nation magazine, Interpress News Service, and many other publications. His website is darjamailiraq.com, darjamailiraq.com. Dar, let's talk about the climate in Syria right now. I understand there have been some big demonstrations there.
Yesterday, there was a massive demonstration here in Damascus. I don't know exactly how many people, but I think it would be safe to say it was well over 100,000. And it's really not a surprise because the government of Syria and most of the people of Syria very much support Hezbollah's right to existence. Over here in the Arab and Muslim world, they're not viewed as a terrorist organization. They're viewed as a legitimate political, albeit militant, group now. They do have a seat in the cabinet in the Lebanese government. They have many seats in the Lebanese parliament. Their party has been fully engaged since its formation in 1985 of social welfare programs, building hospitals, education, this sort of thing. So they've sort of filled a gap left by the inability of the Lebanese government to help the impoverished Shia in southern Lebanon. And so therefore, in that area, as well as Syria, Iran, and so many other countries in this region, they do have very much support, and that is the mood here in Damascus. I just walked back from dinner, and there's Hezbollah flags flying in front of shops, cars driving down the street, but Hezbollah flags flying on the antenna, and the demonstration yesterday showed that. And not only was there demonstrations here in Damascus, but also up in Latakia, a larger city up north on the coast, and several other cities around Damascus as well.
Major U.S. TV networks, Fox, CNN, MSNBC, and others are passing on Israel's remarks that the bombing of Lebanon is a kind of service of freeing the people from Hezbollah.
This is simply propaganda, and it's really not a surprise that propaganda outlets like CNN and especially Fox really toe the Israeli line as far as acting as good mouthpieces to get that information out to people in the West, which this is really the stated goal of this Israeli program of collectively punishing the entire country of Lebanon because of Hezbollah. It's their goal that they want to do this to put pressure on the Lebanese government to try to have them kick Hezbollah out of southern Lebanon. And in fact, that's one of the precepts they say that has to happen before they stop this attack, which basically guarantees that it won't stop because the Lebanese government really can't do much of anything. It's much like the Iraqi government. It's very sectarian, very factionalized, and no one group has much power. So getting them to agree on anything, let alone such a critical issue of Hezbollah, is just not going to happen. So as these media outlets continue to propagandize this Israeli plan, it's certainly not the case on the ground in Lebanon. Let's be real clear, Hezbollah has the majority support of most people in Lebanon. Over 60% of the country is Shia Muslim, and that is the base of Hezbollah, and they even are respected by much of the Christian community and much of the Druze community there as well. So saying that they're trying to split the country, sort of to divide Lebanon into submission to free the people, Dora, you and I have talked from Baghdad about this same type of policy that the United States has instituted in Iraq, where it's basically bombed the country into oblivion, bombed them to free them, destroy the village to save it. It's the same type of rhetoric we've been seeing since Vietnam, and it's complete lunacy. Bottom line is, dropping bombs on a country does not split it up. It does not cause the people to start fighting amongst each other so much as it does cause them to gel together to oppose the enemy. And even the Prime Minister Rafiq Hariri's son, who is now the majority leader of parliament, said 2 days ago from Kuwait that Israel is the enemy, that the enemy is not Hezbollah, the enemy is not from within, it's not a particular faction or sectarian group in Lebanon, rather the enemy is Israel. And that's what we're seeing, that as the bombs continue to fall and Lebanon is bombed into the Stone Age, now most of their critical infrastructure is gone, so many civilians being killed and wounded every single day, the outrage is aimed at Israel, the people dropping the bombs, rather than Hezbollah.
Prime Minister Ehud Olmert in Israel has said he will continue attacking until Israeli soldiers are freed and until Israelis are free from rocket attacks from Lebanon and Hezbollah at the border.
It's simply violence begets more violence, and if we simply look at the cause of events, we see that there were no Hezbollah rockets slamming into train stations, Haifa, and killing Israeli civilians until the Israeli military began to collectively punish the entire country of Lebanon, knocking out critical infrastructure, killing over 200 civilians. There's been right now a maximum of 14 Lebanese soldiers killed. All of the rest of over 220 people now killed are civilians. This is what is causing Hezbollah to respond in kind. Another thing I should point out is that the Israeli military, if you do the math and look at the number of Lebanese civilians killed compared with the number of Lebanese army men that have been killed, it's a 16% ratio of how many military people are being killed out of all that are being killed. Consequently, if we look at Hezbollah and the rockets they fired into Israel, which has been over 400 now, and there's been 24 Israelis die, but 12 of those are military and 12 of those are civilians. So not to justify it or not to approve of it, but that's a 50% ratio as opposed to Ehud Olmert's position of collectively punishing an entire country, and in the process only 16% of the targets being military targets. And them using this rhetoric of we're going to go to the end, we're not ruling out the possibility of a ground invasion, certainly only guarantees that more of the same is going to happen, where more of Lebanese critical infrastructure will be destroyed, more civilians will be killed, and in response, Hezbollah will launch, of course, many, many more rockets into Israel, therefore guaranteeing that more Israeli civilians will die, and therefore guaranteeing that this crazy policy that Israel is engaged in is only going to continue. It's once again that insane cycle of violence where as more people die, the rhetoric gets cranked up even more, and unfortunately this is only going to continue for the coming weeks, if not months, if not longer.
Dar, President Bashar al-Assad of Syria was on Democracy Now! Tuesday, July 18th, and he said that he'd contacted U.S. leaders to offer help after 9/11, and that Syria, in fact, provided intelligence on al-Qaeda, which helped to protect the U.S. from further attacks. We had also heard Ron Suskind on Democracy Now! Confirming that Syria offered sensitive intelligence to America on al-Qaeda. So why didn't Syria become America's ally in the war on terror after 9/11, after these kinds of overtures were made?
Even if we look back to the 1991 Gulf War against Iraq, Bush Sr.'s war against Iraq, we had Syria on board in that coalition, which is why the U.S. green-lighted Syria to go ahead and occupy Lebanon, which they did until just a little bit over a year ago. They only occupied Lebanon because the United States gave it the green light to do so. And then we flash forward up to the very important events that you mentioned that Darfur has said in the past as well, that they did give the U.S. very valuable information about al-Qaeda groups planning terrorist attacks. They have even allowed the U.S., the CIA, to use extraordinary rendition to fly people here to be tortured. So they've been quite complicit with the U.S. in their so-called war on terror. But things changed during the invasion of Iraq when this time Syria refused to join the coalition of the so-called willing, therefore became sort of a sub-country of the Axis of Evil. So they certainly are part of that now simply because of the fact that they would not aid and abet the United States in invading and occupying Iraq. So now they are paying the price, despite the fact that this country has done what it can to help the U.S. prevent terrorist attacks. And I think it's really as simple as that.
I understand that you have been talking with a man, a 25-year-old construction worker, who says he saw a hospital bombed in Lebanon. Just talk about what these refugees are telling you.
collective punishment means basically everything is become a target now. The Geneva Conventions are out the window. And when I was at the northern border, I interviewed a 25-year-old American citizen. His name is Abdul Rahman. He's a social studies teacher. He was vacationing in Beirut with his family. And they were all living in an apartment building nearby the UN building in downtown Beirut. He told me there were so many bomb calls around the city, and they were all bombing civilians. He said, you know, if Israel wants to attack Hezbollah, fine, let them attack Hezbollah, but not the civilians, because all they're doing is attacking the civilians in Lebanon. He was outraged. He was practically yelling responses as I asked him questions. And he said, we live in Shiva terror. We hadn't slept for 3 nights. Every bomb that fell, we wondered if it was going to collapse our building. We wondered when the next one was going to come and if it would hit us. This is terrorism. We are terrorized. He said that very, very clearly. When you bomb a country into oblivion, it bombs Beirut into oblivion. That is blatant terrorism of the civilian population, and that is another violation of the Geneva Convention. Al Jazeera reported that a convoy of ambulances was hit with missiles from either warplanes or helicopters. Other people, so many people have told me that they've seen hospitals bombed. I've been to the western border of Syria, the eastern border of Lebanon, about 5 days ago, and then just 2 days ago I was up on the northern border of Syria and Lebanon. And in both places, people were coming out, and this is at different times. This is about 3 days apart. In both times, I ran into several people at each border coming out. They were all saying the same thing, that they were seeing influences bombed, they were seeing hospitals attacked. Most of the damage being done was against the civilian population, while certainly the Al-Manar, Hezbollah television station, has been hit in some of the Hezbollah infrastructure. Again, if you simply look at the images on TV and listen to what the people are saying coming out of Lebanon, most of the damage being done is against hospitals, it's against ambulances, in the civilian population. I think it's important to be very, very clear about this. The Geneva Conventions were designed, they were born in order to protect the civilian population the best they could during a time of war. So these tactics of collective punishment that we saw in Fallujah and now that we're seeing in Lebanon are grave breaches of the Geneva Convention. Targeting civilians, doing indiscriminate bombings, targeting hospitals and ambulances. These are very, very grave breaches of the Geneva Convention. These are war crimes. People like Prime Minister of Israel, Ehud Olmert, and those who support him, primarily, of course, all of his military, but the U.S. government, who provides over $2 billion a year in aid to Israel, much of that in military hardware. Israel has the largest fleet of F-16s outside of the United States of America because the U.S. supports it so much. So that basically means the U.S. government has been aiding and abetting Israel in these war crimes, and of course that's underscored by the fact that recently George Bush has said, well, of course Israel has the right to so-called defend itself. A ceasefire resolution was put forth in the U.N., which was vetoed by the United States. Basically, 7 of 8 last vetoes to occur in the U.N. have been by the U.S. when it has stood up to defend Israel's policies, which tend to take the shape of war crimes, whether it be now in Lebanon or right now in the Gaza Strip or in the past in other areas of the occupied Palestinian territory. So it's an atrocity that we're witnessing right now. We are watching an entire country collectively punished. It's on all the major media, and the world is standing by and watching it and letting it happen, and is completely impotent because of this fatal design of giving countries like the United States veto power. What kind of a democratic institution is that when over 130 countries belong to it, and there's 3 or 4, I believe, if I recall correctly, who have veto power? That's absurd, and that's why these atrocities are going to continue to take place, and why right now it looks like there's nothing anybody can do to stop it.
You're listening to Talk Nation Radio. Talk about the issue of Israel's claims that the rockets and weapons that Hezbollah has were provided by Iran and or Syria.
There were even claims that there were Iranian Republican guards in southern Lebanon, which is absolutely untrue. But without a doubt, Hezbollah has either bought or been provided with weaponry from Iran. But we can say the same thing of the U.S. providing arms to Israel. So then, therefore, that would make the U.S. a legitimate target by Hezbollah or anyone else who might choose to support them now, wouldn't it, if we applied this same logic that Israel is using against Hezbollah and now saber-rattling towards Syria and Iran? Well, why don't we turn that around and we could say, well, anyone that is supporting Israel then is also a target and they're supporting a terrorist organization, because what Israel is doing is terrorism. This rhetoric that a state can engage in terrorism by the air by using F-16s to bomb civilian populations, drop 500-pound bombs in the middle of city centers, bomb hospitals, rocket ambulances, killing women and children, that is flashing across TV screens over here in the Middle East every single day, every single hour of every single day. And yet when Hezbollah fights back using rockets, of course, firing into civilian populations is also a war crime. But when they fight back, generating not nearly the number of casualties, that's terrorism. It's quite the double standard. And people in the West have to understand that over here in the Arab world and in the Muslim world, it's seen as the hypocritical thing that it really is, because Hezbollah certainly has a right to defend itself, Lebanon especially as a country, as a sovereign country now that is being bombed, and Israeli ground troops yesterday pushed into southern Lebanon for a bit and then back out, as a sovereign country certainly has a right to defend itself. So by Israeli-U.S. logic, is the Lebanese argument a terrorist organization simply because it's fighting to defend their own country? It's really absurd rhetoric, and it's one of these things that back in the West, when a terrorist strike happens, people, like in 9/11, during 9/11, people said, well, why do they hate us? Well, this is why they hate us, because this blatant hypocrisy, this unbridled support of Israel, as they occupy Palestinian territories, as they kill civilians daily, and now as they collectively punish an entire country. Should add that Lebanon is, of course, an Arab country as such, and that's why this is generating such outrage around the Middle East.
We see leaders in various countries respond to all of this in either militant tones to match Israel and the U.S., or some are criticizing Hezbollah, Arab countries, Saudi Arabia, Jordan's King Abdullah, Egypt's President Hosni Mubarak. But then people in many of these countries appear to feel differently. Maybe there are differences within the governments. Would you say that you're seeing the political power base separate from some leaders? Are there divisions forming? Is it the case that the policies may seem unstoppable right now because the decisions were made behind closed doors and away from the people?
Well, you make a very good point, because the fact is there's a huge disconnect between the rulers of these Arab countries like Egypt, like Jordan, like United Arab Emirates, like on down the line, Iraq, where the bottom line is that these rulers are certainly not representing what the people want them to do, because I really can't underscore hard enough how much outrage there is around the Arab world that Israel is attacking Lebanon. Israel is viewed as the Zionist country that is occupying Arab land and shouldn't have been there in the first place. That's how they're viewed in the Arab world. So now that they're launching an act of aggression against Lebanon, an Arab country, there is widespread outrage across the Arab world. And then when you contrast that to these Arab leaders like Hosni Mubarak and others of his ilk, and especially King Abdullah of Jordan, who is one of the finest American pawns out there, that absolutely won't certainly condemn what's happening and won't certainly do anything like consider sanctions against Israel or something a little bit more tangible that might actually have an impact, instead of doing some wrist slapping and maybe clicking their tongues on top of their mouth and saying, well, this is just too bad, and it's certainly Israel should use restraint, and basically mirroring the rhetoric that we see coming out of the G8, that ridiculous G8 conference that's going on right now. And that disconnect is another very worrisome thing, because there are massive demonstrations. They're getting bigger as time goes on. The governments are doing nothing about it. Contrasted with Israel, it does seem that while there are protesters in Israel, while there are certainly hundreds of thousands of people in that country opposed to what their government's doing, just like they're opposed to their government carrying out military operations in the Palestinian territories, let alone occupying it, still, when a country goes to war, at least the beginning of it, like we've seen in our own country, people do tend to tell around the president, kind of wave the flag, make the eagle scream, patriotism, nationalism, it all goes haywire for a while. And that's what we're seeing in Israel right now, where we're afraid. There's terror raid sirens going off daily around cities in Israel. Many people are now living in bomb shelters. Not a fun existence. So, of course, people are hoping government will protect them and support them in using this overkill military style that they're using in Lebanon. But that's really the one country where I would say that the government is doing what the majority of people want it to do, contrasted with the Arab countries where there is a massive disconnect, and the Arab leaders are condemned and scoffed at by both people in the population of their countries. And in fact, when I went to the western border of Lebanon about 5 days ago, I interviewed one man who's been in there vacationing from Kuwait, who was also very upset at the leader of his country, and basically said, "I'm leaving Lebanon because this is never going to stop until the Arab leaders move their asses. None of them are moving their asses, and nothing will change until they do something that really has real consequence against the Israeli government." And that is the kind of outrage that is commonplace here now in the Middle East.
Many of us are just searching for news on the internet and through various sites. What, if anything, are Lebanese and Syrians and others seeing and hearing on Arab TV networks that comes from perhaps Hezbollah itself, from Assad Abu Khalil and others in the picture, or perhaps from those in Hamas who are also dealing with Israel in the Palestine-occupied territories?
Yes, the Al-Manar television station that I mentioned earlier, it was bombed by the Israelis, but they failed to knock out the bunker that Al-Manar had underneath their building. So that TV station is still broadcasting. And that is a quite popular station. It's very common here in Damascus or Latakia or other cities around Syria that I've been to. So I walk into a hotel and see that the person in the lobby sitting there watching Al-Manar. I went out to eat at a restaurant tonight, and lo and behold, there's Al-Manar on televisions in that restaurant. So that is a very common channel here in Syria and also in other places around the Middle East. And they're showing, of course, reality on the ground. They're showing the black women and children. Of course, a lot of Al-Manar is just simply Hezbollah propaganda, and it's simply not worth watching. But more importantly than Al-Manar, though, is Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera has a very strong presence in Lebanon. They have scores of reporters there. They are broadcasting from Beirut. They're doing a very fine job of covering it. They are interviewing Israeli military officials as well, and also covering the situation in Israel. But in Lebanon, they are doing a fine job of getting people out to the scene where these bombs are happening. So that translates to what people here in the Middle East are seeing is the result of this collective punishment of Lebanon by the Israelis. They're seeing the dead women and children. They're seeing the blown up ambulances, the completely destroyed hospitals. They're seeing grain silos that have been rocketed by Israeli warplanes. They're seeing the new lighthouse that had recently been built on the Lebanese coast in Beirut that was rocketed by an American-made Apache helicopter a couple of days ago. They're seeing all of these atrocities. They're seeing the billowing smoke plumes coming out of different areas around Beirut 24/7, and this is the footage coming out. When nightfall happens, they're seeing these giant flashing bombs exploding around Beirut. That's what people are seeing because that's the reality on the ground. There are massive bombing campaigns going off there every single day carried out by the Israelis, and that's what people are seeing. It is the reality on the ground. That's why there's so much outrage, and that's why there's a huge disconnect to people in the West because of the corporate media who basically run the rhetoric that you mentioned earlier that we see from CNN and Fox. We don't see the civilian casualties in Lebanon. We don't see the dead bodies, the babies with their heads sheared off, bombs, phosphorus weapons been used by the Israelis in southern Lebanon. People in the West don't see this, so then they don't understand why there's so much rage over here in the Middle East.
Dar, let's talk about the impression U.S. soldiers are making on the Arab world through operations in Iraq, which to some extent are also joint operations with Israel, as I understand it. Are some of the recent cases of U.S. soldiers getting arrested for atrocities impacting the views of Hamas or Hezbollah leaders as they take actions where Israel is concerned?
This is another very important point. And in fact, I did write a piece several months ago for Truthout called An Alliance of Violence. And I discussed the fact that when the Israeli military carries out operations in the occupied territories, there is almost immediate blowback in Iraq, let alone around the rest of the Arab world, but particularly in Iraq. The example I cite is when the Israeli military assassinated Sheikh Yassin, the leader of Hamas, down in Gaza on March 22, 2004. 9 days later, the four Blackwater security contractors were murdered in Fallujah, and that was a reprisal attack for Sheikh Yassin. There were pamphlets distributed at the scene that said very clearly, this is a revenge attack for Sheikh Yassin. Down with Israel, death to Israel, this kind of thing going on at the scene of that attack. And of course, we all know what happened to the bodies of those contractors. Now we're seeing the same thing in Iraq. Just 2 days ago, Musadda al-Sadr, the Shia cleric who's already had two intifadas against the U.S. military there, said, basically hinted very strongly that they will support Hezbollah, and there probably will be some fighting now coming out of the Mahdi army, his militia, against the U.S. and the British, and consequently, now, there's been so much going on, excuse me if I get my days mixed up, but it was either yesterday or today, a British soldier was killed down just north of Basra and another one was wounded. Well, that's Musadda al-Sadr's Mahdi army. So, without a doubt, there's blowback happening in Iraq, and of course, also because of these atrocities you mentioned, there are Israeli mercenaries working in the prisons, doing interrogations, doing some of the torturing. Also, there are Israeli special forces in Iraq. They've been there from the beginning. And they also have a very strong presence in the northern region of Kurdistan. So what's happening in Lebanon, let alone everything that I just mentioned in Iraq, they're just pouring more fuel onto the fire. Really, it's important that people understand that Israel is not loved in the Arab world and in the Middle East. And it's certainly if there were different policies of peace and coexistence and there was some fairness happening in the occupied territories, occupied by Israel, that is, there wouldn't be this. But the fact is, people here are all too aware that there is massive oppression going on in Palestine by the Israeli military, and this U.S. invasion of Iraq has heightened that awareness, and U.S. policy in Iraq coupled with Israeli policy in the Gaza Strip, for example, and now in Lebanon, is really just underscoring to everyone here how it's perceived is that the Israelis and the Americans will launch wars of aggression anytime they choose. They will use heavy-handed tactics to punish people. They will use collective punishment. They will violate the Geneva Conventions. There's nothing you can do about it. And that is the policy here. That's what people are seeing now today, clearer than ever before. And that's why there's so much outrage.
Dar Jamil, thanks so much for joining us on Talk Nation Radio.
Thanks, Dori.
Journalist Dar Jamil joined us from Damascus, Syria. He's been interviewing refugees from Lebanon and watching political developments there as Israeli F-16s bomb Lebanese cities and find sites along the Beirut to Damascus highway in the direction of Syria. You can read his latest stories, Fleeing Lebanese Speak of Indiscriminate Bombing, and Hezbollah, an Emerging Political Force, in Interpress News. You can read his other work in truthout.org or on his webpage, darjamilirak.com. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. Talk Nation Radio is produced in the studios of WHUS Radio at the University of Connecticut in Storrs, Connecticut. WHUS.org to listen live every Wednesday at 5 p.m., TalkNation.org, and TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts and discussion at the New Cafe. Our music is by Fritz Heed, fritzheed.com.